Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about fungicide and some thoughts on when to apply it. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at EPA's proposal at registering dicamba once again. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about the history of crop protection. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Eat all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. All right. It's EAA week. You guys seen any funky aircraft?
Limps.
You did?
Oh, yeah. The blip, like...
Oh, a blimp.
The blimps, yeah.
I thought you said limps. I'm like, what is a limps?
No, the two Goodyear blimps are just hovering
around. Floating around Oshkosh?
Oshkosh. The greater Oshkosh area, so it's good.
I don't go that way, so I don't...
You don't have to go far to see, like, sometimes, even up this way, you'll see some of the...
I was scouting in Shiocton a couple years ago, and I saw, like, planes doing, like, loop-de-loops.
Yeah, they're like you say, they're just all over, which is, it's neat. You get kind of an air show while you're scouting, but it's...
For free. Yeah.
But when we want to fly the drone and the airspace is restricted, that's a little frustrating at times.
Yeah, I could see that.
Have you guys ever been to the show?
Never been to EA, no.
Nope.
Have you, Bill?
No.
No, and I heard it's awesome, and I also heard it's quite expensive.
It is, so. That's what I hear, yeah.
Well, they did, I think it was Wednesday night, they had like a light show, drone show thing down there that I saw somebody post something on Facebook about. And I talked to somebody who had gone, I think it was like a couple years ago. They must do, like, fireworks and planes and stuff and, like, planes with fireworks and this whole, like...
I think those are bombs.
Elaborate thing. And
missiles.
A couple years ago, apparently they couldn't get, like, stuff to work. Like, the fireworks weren't shooting off and the stuff in the planes wasn't working, so they actually had to cancel, like, their night show.
Okay.
But, yeah, I've heard it's good.
Hopefully the fireworks didn't blow up on the plane.
Right.
Oh, look, the pretty plane's on fire.
It's also been a sad week. We've lost not only a wrestling legend, Hulk Hogan, but Ozzy.
Are you guys big Ozzy fans or just...
Yeah.
I'd say that's your... Bill, I could see that being your sweet spot, both the music and the show.
Yeah, I didn't watch the show much. But the music definitely being...
Everybody knows Crazy Train.
Oh, Crazy Train's the best. Like, yeah.
I was more an Ozzy guy than a Black Sabbath guy.
Sure. Iron Man.
What does that mean?
Well, he started in Black Sabbath.
Right, okay. Right.
And then he went out on his own.
And Led Zeppelin now is kind of just his solo career.
Okay. Crazy Train, that's Black Sabbath, right?
Yeah, I think Iron Man's Black Sabbath, too. But yeah, this would have been like Ozzy solo. I'm trying to think. I don't know what year the split would be, to be honest. Quick search in the old Google machine.
I do have one.
He began his successful solo career with Blizzard of Oz in 1980, which that is a name right there. Blizzard of Oz.
So this was No More Tears album, and it was released in 91. So I was like 13, 14. So yeah, right, just about middle school going into high school. So yeah, I had the CD, Matt.
Sweet. Not the cassette tape you
didn't have to rewind it.
Yep, I had a CD. Had a tower.
Four-tower of CDs.
Yep, the TV set.
Five thing turntable. Carousel.
Did you have a multi-disc changer in your car, too?
Did you know, I actually
So remember that was a thing like in your trunk?
Yeah, I didn't have that. I took a CD Walkman.
Yeah.
And you could buy this little thing, like it had a cassette with a cord coming off of it, and you plugged it to the CD.
Yep, I had that too.
You put the cassette in.
Yep.
But there was no, like...
At that time, there's no anti-shock.
Yeah, there's no anti-shock, so I had to make this, like, box with... I don't know if I put, like, tissue paper or
foam,
something.
Like a box, like a shoebox with foam and everything else, and... A lot of times I feel like if I rode with Bill, I had to hold it so that it wouldn't, like, I was the anti-shock or whoever the passenger was.
Even the anti-shock was kind of a joke because I remember I had a CD player when I got one that had that on there. It reminded me of, like, cell phone bars now, like, you had this little thing. And
well, it must
the, the bumpier it would get, you know, the more the bars would go down. I think it was just a delay is all.
Well, I would say it must have saved part of the CD into the little memory it could.
Right, it had a buffer or whatever. Because then you hit like a really big bump and you'd still lose it. My brother bought so I had like what you were talking about with a cassette where you'd put it in the cassette player. He bought the like FM transmitter little thing.
Oh, yeah.
And that thing was terrible.
Yeah, it didn't. I it bought
just all fuzzy. Like,
yeah,
those suck.
Because you had to go on like, I think it was like 89 point something
some
station.
Random.
And, yeah, it would just be, like, it'd work, and then it would just stop, or it'd get really fuzzy, or, yeah.
Actually, I was surprised he lived as long as he did.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like, where you look at, like, guys like him, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, like, guys who looked like they've been 70 for, like, 30 years.
Right.
Because of all the extracurricular activities they participated in.
Yes. Well, especially Ozzy, to get kicked out of a band for doing too much extracurricular activities. Like, that's impressive.
Especially
in its own of like
in the 80s and
90s. Right, that band.
Like all those guys, every band did that stuff.
They were all doing those activities. And then for them to say, like, you are doing it too much.
Yeah.
And we can't count on you, so you're out.
Did you know Ozzy was a farmer?
I did not.
Yeah, I found this clip, and I just...
Before you play that, though, I just want to say one of my favorite memes, and I've seen it for multiple people now, but it's, you know, Ozzy outlived Richard Simmons, so maybe sweating to the oldies isn't the best choice for your health regimen, since obviously Ozzy outlived Richard Simmons. But please, yes, let's hear about Ozzy as a farmer.
Yeah, we have a clip from him from some podcast he did, and I just... I loved him explaining, loved the respect he gave to farmers. So here, I'll hit play.
Kind of have a farm going on at Welders in the UK because you've got the deer, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you've got a ton of land. Don't you want to get some cows, horses?
I've got cows on the land. I've got 350 acres there.
So you've got cows?
No, not my cows. We're a farmer.
So you're kind of a farmer anyway.
No, I'm not a fucking farmer. Do you know a farmer is the hardest job on the planet?
Yeah.
It's 365 days a
year. Yeah, it is, yeah.
They get up at the crack of fucking dawn.
Well, you do anyway.
Oh, yeah.
You fucking text me at 5 a.m. What's going on?
Well, you do as well.
I do. I'm
the thing is, you reply.
I reply so straight away. I know.
Shannon said to me, well, can I have a lake at Weldon? You know the way the deer used to be?
Yeah.
That is now a lake.
Do you understand how few people get to say the words, could I have a lake? And then they have a lake.
I didn't understand half that.
It is funny how... Like, especially in his later years, you'd listen to Ozzy talk, couldn't understand half of what he was saying. But then he would sing, and it's like clear as day.
Yeah.
Like, you could understand the words. It's like, how does that work?
So it sounds like he may not be a farmer from that clip. He's a landlord.
He's a landlord, but he's putting out respect to farmers.
Yeah.
They're the hardest working people.
Right, right.
365 days a year. So, very cool.
All right. Well, you guys... Ready to move into our topic for today?
Yep.
So it's that time of year. Tassels are popping out of the corn. And so the questions are flying of... And I feel like we talk about this every year. But we get the questions every year. Like, when should I be applying fungicide? Should I apply fungicide? What kind of fungicide should I apply?
How much does it cost?
Yep. What's it going to cost?
Is
it worth it?
This year, though, there is an added layer of questioning that farmers in general are just getting like barraged by Facebook ads or whatever social media platform they're on, ads about fungicides. And everyone out there saying, like, basically almost like implying if you don't put it on, you're a bad farmer.
Sure.
So I think there's also like this new level this year of questions about it and concerns. And to some degree, rightfully so, we've had the weather that is conducive to get it.
Right.
The radio said when I drove in this morning, it was 100% humidity.
Yeah. So it's the humidity level's been high. We've had, so not saying that the alarm that's out there isn't wrong. However, you still do have to make management decisions. The other thing going on this year is prices aren't very good.
Right,
so
right.
You've got to just weigh those things out. And so, yes, that is maybe part of it, like I said, is this sort of guilt you're feeling by not applying it. To me, I analogize it to currently when you go buy something and then they ask you, so you're...
Do you want the warranty?
Yeah, yes. And some of these items, that if you want the warranty, it's like a $30 electronic item at Best Buy, and do you want to pay 99 cents for an extended warranty? And I'm thinking like...
I'll just buy another
one. No, I don't. I'll just throw it away and buy another one of that. But then you go buy a washing machine, and they spend most of the time telling you how good the washing machine's going to be. Then you go to buy it, and they're like, you probably want the extended warranty.
You're going to get like 3-4
years. Yeah, you're going to get like, you're going to have problems, and this is going to go wrong. Just a service call now is $100, and you're just like, okay, holy man. You just feel so guilty not,
well,
you're like that fear of like, is this thing just going to be ruined? And that's how I feel right now with corn and with fungicides. All year we're told like, these are the best genetics ever. They're so good, you know. Yeah, we look at disease ratings in the off season, and you pick the right one, and then we get to this time of year. It's like, oh, but if you don't put fungicide on,
fungicide is going to kill you.
You're going to have a problem. So I do think we're at a new ratchet level of that, Matt. So I agree with all what you said, and then that. So maybe part of it is just take a step back, and we're going to talk through some things of what you could be thinking about for your farm and how to be making those choices.
Well, when we talk about fungicides, I was good to remember, it's a preventative, not a curative.
Right.
So you cannot just wait for the disease to show up and then put it out there.
That people are using like the insurance analogy, cheap insurance, but I actually think the warranty thing works because I can't go get a warranty after my washing machine's broke.
Right.
And then be like, oh yeah, fix it. It's too late. And insurance is too. Once, if you don't have the insurance and something happens, it's too late.
Yeah.
So I agree with you, Matt. That is one struggle with this is, by the time you have problems, it's often too late. Not always, but often enough, it's too late to fix.
So just for perspective, like take out BMR corn. We're not going to talk about that, right? Because that is 100% probably sprayed. How many percentage of your corn actually does get sprayed that you guys consult on?
I was trying to add up those acres because it seems like it varies each year, but it's closer of like you're saying with BMR, that's a very susceptible variety. So let's even take out certain varieties that you just know are extremely, we'll put those in the group, but it's probably only 30 to 50% that gets sprayed in this other subgroup.
Okay. Mine's less than that.
Yeah.
It's maybe 10.
So that's the group I'm talking about that are this year, are more of those guys going to apply this year, or are they still okay with where they're at?
No, they're not. Like the guys that don't spray aren't changing.
Yeah. And in some ways, I think that's okay. Like they may have problems, but if in general they haven't in the past, they probably will be okay. Yeah.
And if we're talking silage, and we're talking tasseling, which a lot of corn is either starting to, or you know, I've been seeing a lot of tassels this week. 45 days, roughly.
Rule of thumb.
Yep. Yes.
Until
to 55. Yeah.
Could be.
If you get disease, it will be 45.
Right.
Or less.
It'll dry down.
Maybe 35. But agreed, man.
That window is one where if it's not BMR, I would have a harder time. I think if I was in their shoes, I would have a harder time pulling the trigger on fungicide on silage if it wasn't BMR, if it was something that had a decent disease rating or was a, you know, a different corn versus grain, which is going to be out in the field longer. Longer,
correct.
Last year, not so much, but this year we may not have the super dry fall where everyone or almost everyone's done harvesting by the time we get to November. So
that puts us right after Labor Day for chopping.
Yeah, in general, we're going to be normal mid-September for chopping. So I think Matt's onto something there is corn grain has to stand longer, needs more protection. The other thing that before corn pollinates, it's got more defense there to kind of hold disease back, whereas we do see a lot of disease coming in after pollination. So you've got that longer time where your sort of defense systems are a little bit less than optimum. So I agree with Matt on that too, is looking at how long that's going to be out there.
Well, and it's throwing more leaves on as it grows. So if those newer leaves aren't riddled with disease, you're having ability to still photosynthesize at that point. Now we're going to pollinate and then throw an ear on there. And that's like our most important thing, right? We want to protect that like our firstborn child. And if we get ear rot or insects chewing on the ear or whatever it is, we're going to have a chance for that susceptibility.
Right. It's one of many challenges that we may face. I mean, there's tornadoes just north of us earlier this week, and got a farm that I sent me a picture of their cornfield, which is laid flat. So, I mean, your storm-damaged fields, anything that's got an open wound on it from these types of things is going to be even more susceptible to disease than just your normal run-of-the-mill plant that's out there living its best life.
You should run your time-lapse camera up there, Matt, and see how fast it comes back.
That would be neat because, yeah, usually when it lays down, it still has the ability to kind of
gooseneck back up.
But, yeah, one thing to think about is just, yeah, before pollination, that plant's primary focus is in leaves, stalks, roots, and all of those systems. So all the sugars, all the growth is pushed, you know, and the nutrients are pushed towards that. And then once we hit pollination, that plant very quickly now is switching into how do I fill that developing ear and pushing all of its sugars and nutrients into that ear. So in some ways you're opening yourself up a little bit because of that shift that it has a little bit less to defend against the pathogen. So that we ask why that timing for fungicide, and that's in general why is because of that shift. So we're seeing that sort of, you know, it just doesn't have that defense mechanism as well at that time. So like Matt said, is when you're talking about corn silage, we don't need it to defend itself as long. We just need 45 days. So can a plant do that? You know, are the varieties that you picked pretty good at disease, then you're probably going to find. But like a BMR corn where that has no defense there, or a poor or agronomic corn, then we're going to need the fungicide there to sort of help you out.
Yes, BMR corn is the French in World War II. it's looking one way and not checking behind it, and so it's going to get run over by disease, whereas the French got ran over by the Germans coming through Belgium. But, you know, it's just, yeah, they have it has less chance of doing well in a disease scenario, which, like you mentioned earlier, Todd, we're in a year where we're getting humidity, we're getting moisture, all these things that disease loves, and that will make us more prone to having some sort of issue as opposed to if it was a dry, you know, this time of year, normally we're getting drier, it's hot, but it's dry. And we might have the humidity. Everybody talks about the corn sweat now, which
thing's
been bugging us for a few years, but nobody talked about it before, three, 4 years ago? Now everybody talks about it.
Now everybody says, yes, it's hot outside because of corn sweat.
Yeah, the corn sweating. But, so they're there's a lot of factors that go into this decision, and it's not an easy one by any means, because Bill, you mentioned cost. Like, it's not a cheap pass necessarily. You have to have, you know, you can do it by ground rig, but a lot of it's airplane, now drone applications, and those are not a cheap pass across right. the field.
And some helicopter, like you say,
helicopter,
too.
So. Yeah.
To one thing to consider is always the disease triangle when we're talking about disease. So, like Matt said, there's a whole bunch of things to think about, but the top three things, because these are the three things you need to get a disease, is a susceptible host, not a successful host. That will not. We want it successful.
Right.
If you have a susceptible host, the pathogen present, so that's got to be there. So something, you know, bacteria, virus, fungi, something there. So that if we're doing a fungicide, obviously that fungi has to be present. And then the environment has to be conducive so that the basically those two things can interact. So really those are the, so if you think about the environment, obviously, like we said, right now, that is the big scare, because the environment is very conducive for those things to be a problem. But if you haven't had the pathogen at all in the past, you know, obviously could blow up and come into your field. But, or if you have a very, very good defense mechanism in your host and a very good variety, you know, you may not have that. You probably will not have that problem. So those are the three factors to really consider for each specific field that you manage.
It doesn't. I mean, we're talking mostly about corn, but it applies to beans too. Obviously, there, if you know, if a white mold history or, you know, other diseases there, it does translate across crops. Corn and beans are the two most likely ones where you're looking to make a decision. It feels like wheat, which is in the process of being harvested or close to being harvested now, that's become kind of an automatic, where a lot of guys do fungicide there.
I think the hard part with soybeans is, you know, we know white mold is a problem, right? But we don't know that every year is going to be a problem.
Right.
We don't know that it's going to be a problem until we get past the time when you can actually do something about it.
Right. Once you see it, it's already there and
right.
too late.
And so I think I was doing some pricing on some fungicide because the guys were asking. And, you know, Endura was like $55 an acre. And then two passes of a different one was over 60. So it's like, that's a big bite this year with the way corn price or bean price is. And so maybe it's something where you target. That was a talk I had yesterday with the guy. He's like, well, I know the two fields are really bad, so let's just
do those.
Let's just do those. The other ones I haven't had beans on in a while, we can forego that cost this year. So that's the other tough part, is like, we have to be proactive with these fungicides. Otherwise, we're not going to do the job. And then they always kick themselves when they get in the combine and go through the white mold spots, and the monitor goes down to 6 bushels or whatever it is. And you end up, it's like, well, everything else is at 60 or 80 or whatever it is, and this is at 10. I surely could have made up my money.
Right. It would have paid. Hindsight's always 20/20.
Right.
Especially when it comes to fungicide.
Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah, that I guess the reason for this episode was I had a discussion with a farm that's got some BMR, and we were talking about fungicide timing. And he's like, when should I be doing it? And, you know, obviously we, all the things we talked about here, the risk factors and everything, that they're going to pull the trigger, so they're going to do it. And now it's like, okay, well, when should we do it? Because it'd be nice to say that, you know, you have 100% control of that, you know, and if you're going to apply it yourself, then maybe you do. But if you're waiting on an airplane, drones, I guess you probably hopefully have a little bit more control there. But sometimes you got to schedule it for the best available time as opposed to maybe the ideal timing for fungicide. And even that can vary a little bit. And we were talking before we recorded a little bit how, you know, some people say brown silk, some white silk, some tassel.
There's obviously research out there to help kind of direct you, but I would agree that you talk to personal preference, and some guys want it on a little bit different than others. And part of it maybe is change in that when most of it was applied with ground rig, obviously, we're once you get, you know, full pollination and tassels out on silage corn, it's very tall.
Yep.
And it's just hard to even apply.
Well, that was another
at that stage. So
I had that other too, Todd. It was like the farmer's like, well, I want to wait till pollination is done.
Right.
Because it plugs up my radiator and everything in my sprayer.
Yeah.
Like, so.
Which is that's fair. It makes sense. Right. So you either got to be kind of right ahead of tasseling or right when those tassels are coming out or let it get through pollination.
Right.
Or it's kind of a problem. But now as we get, you know, more plane availability and then especially the drone thing opens up that window that now we can go, you know, that's not part of the decision in that. So, which even this year, part of this, especially if you're using a drone or helicopter, part of the decision maybe to do it at pollination to get pollen moving and make sure you get successful pollination, just you have that double, that extra thing that could help you. So,
right.
And not that a plane too with that air, you know, air movement couldn't throw more pollen around to get you pollinating successfully. But there's also other factors in there that, honestly, that research shows, I wouldn't say it's inconclusive, but it shows that depending on the year, the timing can be different. But like you have here, Matt, there's certain things that maybe for some reasons you might want to pick certain application windows to help with other things like in silage.
Yep. Well, and like we said, silage has a shorter time in the field. So being a little on the early side with silage probably isn't a bad thing. Do you guys have anybody doing, for a while there, it was this big thing of doing like the V8 to V10 application and then doing another one at Tassel. You have anybody doing that anymore?
That was about 10 years ago. There were some companies out there pushing, yes, that put it with your Roundup or whatever.
And yeah, like soybeans was always like a two-pass kind of thing.
Right, to try to get the white mold, protect
for
all
white
the
mold protection. But yeah, corn, it just never seemed to pay to do that. Early pass and then followed up with a second pass.
And the two-pass program I'm hearing now as well, and this is more for specifically for corn grain and fields that have a history of really bad tar spot.
Sure.
Or really bad northern corn leaf blight is you go at tassel and then like an R3, late R2, R3 application.
Okay.
So it'd be like Illinois, Iowa area. If you have that's another two-pass that I've been hearing to try to get you more protection. But again, we said like cost and all that stuff comes into play of, especially that two pass, you're not piggybacking it on a herbicide like you are at V8.
Right.
You're throwing it out there as a special another pass. So it just can be very expensive doing that.
I did see an article from Damon out of UW about, you know, what are we, we're obviously concerned about plant health and, you know, not our plants not dying in silage. We're worried about that, right? That's any fungicide. We're protecting the plant. We're also worried about...
We want the plants to... That's a good point, Bill. We want the plants to dry down normally, not die
yeah.
at that stage. Right. And it can affect moisture a lot. Like all of a sudden, the window of moisture just drops out.
Right. So, and there's a little difference in grain because we have a little bit bigger window to harvest if we do have it dying. We're just going to lose yield. But in silage, if we go from 70% moisture to 50% moisture in a week because our plant died, well, that's not good. But Damon put out a paper about reducing DON level, the mycotoxin producing chemicals that we have in our silage pile, which for dairymen is obviously very important. And his take was, while inconsistent, the best result was applying fungicide within 5 to 7 days of white silk. So we're not talking about brown silk anymore. We want to be way ahead of that and be at white silk. He didn't say it's a silver bullet or it's going to happen all the time, but he said the best results were doing it then.
And that's to reduce vomitox and reduce DON, which in silage, what I like to look in when we look at fungicides is what are those things that you do with the fungicide that can get you kind of those two or three additions. So in winter wheat, when we apply it, mainly the reason we're doing it is to prevent head scab.
Yep.
So that in a little head scab is fine, but then at the elevator they dock you. So there's that, you lose yield from head scab, plus then you get docked so bad that it's this double whammy. So I think you're onto something here with that silage, Bill, in that you're gaining yield, hopefully, with this fungicide. you're gaining
life.
Life of that stand. And then this, if you have a vomitoxin problem on your farm and we want to start, you know, pulling out, say your nutritionist is throwing a lot of binders in with your feed for this vomitoxin, that's a huge cost.
Yep.
That if we can reduce the level of that or eliminate it, that's a good thing. So that's a very interesting that, so basically we want white silk to me would be, and this is my actual favorite timing is I'm not so worried about like tassels being out. I want all the silks out,
right.
Which normally, hopefully not this year. I've seen inconsistent timing. Sometime we had a few fields where varieties are throwing silks and not tassel. And we had a few fields where they're throwing tassel and not silk. So it doesn't always jive as perfect as you want, but having silks out so that we can get that fungicide protecting that new cob, new young cob is a very good thing. And like you said, if the research showing that, Bill, we can reduce the DON levels, that's great.
All right, I guess one last thing before we move on and wrap this up. Have you, you know, we're scouting through this season, and this is, I know, probably my least favorite time of scouting was once you get pollination and
it's all of our least favorite.
Yeah. You're trying to get out there and still look for things. So you mentioned herbicide. We're not really looking to piggyback herbicide in this pass, but insecticide, if you're having an insect problem, could be something you could piggyback here. If the problem is there, like a Western mean cutworm, we've seen fall armyworm, but not really much in corn,
Earworm,
rootworm beetles.
Rootworm beetles is the one that I.
Yep.
Bill, how many, you had asked earlier, like how many fields are getting applied of yours that are getting fungicide? How many get piggybacked insecticide?
Last year, they all did because we were seeing Western bean cutworm,
right,
egg masses, and the fields that we didn't apply at all, like they weren't fungicide guys, and we talked about Western bean, and they didn't want to spend the money or run the corn over. The conversation this year is like, well, if we see those, we're going to spray.
Right.
Because it did, you know, we did have
right
mold and different things in their ears. But I can't find a single egg mass.
We're not finding any egg. Very, very, very few.
Even the traps, like I've been watching our trapping network, and that's been helping. And I got one literally on a farm that I have a problem with Western bean, and there's zero in the trap.
So I think that's a great plug for IPM in general too. For me, more of my issue is on corn rootworm beetles, which beetle bombing them isn't always successful. Like doing it this way isn't always a good thing. But big but here, caveat: if you're piggybacking it, so if I got fields that I'm seeing a really heavy pressure of rootworm beetles, and they've been corn on corn for quite a while, I like to include the insecticide.
Yeah.
There then. I had one field where, you know, a farm, very heavy cover crop, and we did see some armyworm. I don't think it's going to, and then rootworm beetle, so that one will get insecticide sure. with it. But I do think this is one where I don't like the use of this one and calling it cheap insurance. You know, the piggybacking is tough because you throw the application costs because you say, well, I'm already doing that. My application costs are here, so all I got to decide on is the $3 to $6 cost of this insecticide. So then you say this cheap insurance, but that's one where if you don't have the bug there, you obviously don't need that insurance. And the residual on a lot of these is, you know, 2 to 3 weeks-ish that it can help and it can be preventative. But this is one where I really feel if insects are present and you know there's an issue, yes, it advocates piggybacking, but if not, then you'll be okay leaving it out.
And those applications last year worked.
Right.
It worked out perfectly that the fungicide and the emergence of the Western bean cutworm worms, those little tiny worms, it was exactly on time. And the fields I sprayed had zero pressure in the ears. And the fields we didn't, they had a couple of worms in each ear. So it did work last year really well. Now, again, may that timing work out. This year, maybe not, but like you said, Todd, there is a few weeks residual on the insecticide where, and then talking years ago when Western bean just kind of got started and we were worried about it, I remember Todd, I don't think you were working with the farm at the time, or we were, we had a corn silage dry down day in Freedom there, and the Pioneer guy brought a couple ears, and it had Western beans. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I remember talking to entomologist, that's what I'm trying to get out, entomologist from Syngenta, and he had said that those little tiny worms just need to, like, crawl over the insecticide.
Sure.
As long as it's still sure, there. It's
such a small worm at that time.
Yeah, and it didn't get broken down by sun or rain or whatever. And he said it was about 2 weeks that you could expect that that would be active on those leaves.
And we talked about DON and vomitoxin earlier, but bugs are one that they've found that because they create entry wounds and stuff into that ear bugs.
Yeah.
You know, earworms and insects are problems. So, like, if we can prevent them, that helps on that as well. So.
All right. So
one last thing, Matt.
Yeah. Nope. Sorry.
No, I gotta get this in because it's bugging the. It's been so.
Get his mic.
One thing for our listeners out there is the Tar Spotter and the Sporecaster.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Apps are.
They're gone.
I can't download it on my new phone. They won't let me, and they said they're not being supported anymore. And then I was trying actually on. I pulled up my own phone, old phone, and it's on here, but it doesn't, from what I can tell, they don't work anymore. And I did find a few things that said that basically that there's this, they're not really gone. They've moved it all into this crop protection network. So it's kind of just changed locations. You guys try yours. Are they working? Am I just doing it wrong or missing something?
Mine's working.
The app works.
Okay.
Yes. The app works fine, but when I go to run a forecast, it would not work. So, like that, if you have it already downloaded and everything.
Yeah, it won't.
It'll work.
I can enter all the data, but right. When I hit run model, it doesn't.
Yes. Okay. So that's the same thing I was having the problem with.
That's Sporecaster.
Maybe a better way to say is the app works still, but I can't do anything about it. So the last couple of weeks I've been like, I was like, what is happening? So the CropProtectionNetwork.org is sort of the new tool to use. And they've got kind of these web-based tools. And that is a new trend in general, is a little less on the app side because, well, think about when they create these apps. Now I got to have it support Android and iPhone, and I got to keep it updated and keep it working. And if they just use a web portal, which you can use on your computer as well,
sure,
or your phone. So this is from talking to like Damon Smith and some of the people at the UW, or them kind of commenting that I think they're moving this direction. But
it seems to be the general trend is moving to online platforms for a lot of stuff. So,
but they have a lot of different tools. You know, there's a corn fungicide ROI calculator, which what better tool to use right now if you're considering right. That of what is my return on investment on that. And so anyway, I'd like to kind of push our listeners to that website, that if you're having a problem with the decision and you just need something a little bit more to help you, is there's a whole bunch of tools on there about forecasting disease and then helping you try to decide what basically with corn diseases, soybean diseases, and have different estimates and things to help have some more solid numbers there to help you decide. So I like how they've got like publications so you can read a bunch. They've got tools, which I like their thing. It says start tooling so you can, and then they've got like a real time interactive map with crop issues. So you could kind of maybe see what's going on in your area. So, like I said, it was, I didn't hear it, and I just felt out of loop not hearing that those apps were kind of being discontinued. But again, and it was tricky because the app still can work. It just isn't going to do the forecast for you. But go to this Crop Protection Network. There's a lot of really good tools. And what's neat about that is it's a product of Land Grant University. So it's multiple universities throughout the Midwest that are supporting that, which is great because then you've got a lot of
broader data.
Well, a lot of data, a lot of knowledge there, which is just great.
So you want to hear something ironic? literally just get a text message just now. Just right now.
What?
Yep. From a farmer that you talked about the tornadoes went through the other night. Yep. Yep. He farms just east of there. Any thoughts on fungicide with the down corn?
Yep. So
there it is.
Yep.
Did you just put, what's your reply? Just yes or no?
Well, I think there has to be some talk about, did it just lean?
Well, there's also talk of their return on your investment.
Right, right. Exactly. All those things.
What, and what's been damaged. Yeah. Right.
And a lot of times you got to wait a few days just to see what comes back. Because even if it doesn't look snapped, sometimes it is snapped. You got to, that was the hard part. The discussion I had with the other farmer was, thinking about even what he's going to do with it, like not even a fungicide thought. It was like, do I try to chop it now or do I wait? And it's like, well, you got to wait at least a few days just to see what it does. Maybe it'll come back up. And yeah, it's still going to be a pain to chop, but at least you could have an easier time picking it up than trying to get it right off the ground. So
I just thought that was,
it was very timely.
We're recording an episode about that, sir.
So there you go. Some things to think about when it comes to fungicide. Look at your disease risk, your fungicide timing, type of fungicide you're going to use, when you're going to apply it, and you know, as far as piggybacking insecticide, if you're having insect issues, it might be worth it, but probably not an automatic. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. The EPA is proposing registering dicamba once again.
Woo-hoo.
So it'll be for over-the-top use on cotton and soybeans with restrictions that will be intended for limiting ecological harm. Obviously, we all know about the off-target damage issues that have come up over the years and that led dicamba to be unregistered. So agency said it was imposing new mitigation requirements for the herbicide. Among them are a single-use maximum application rate of half a pound acid equivalent dicamba per acre, a no more than two applications allowed with a maximum annual application of 1 pound acid equivalent of dicamba per acre for all combined dicamba-containing products, prohibition of aerial application, a 240-foot downwind buffer. Spray solution has to have a drift reduction agent and pH buffering volatility reduction agent to in the tank to in higher percentages as temperature increases, and temperature-dependent restrictions to manage volatility. No applications above 95 degrees Fahrenheit, and 3 points of mitigation required based on the runoff erosion mitigation menu. So, while it's coming back, we're used to having some of these some restrictions on it, and it seems every time we fall down this rabbit hole, there's more and more restrictions, that get imposed on it. But at least it will be potentially an option if it does get re-registered. So Bayer, which is the maker of Xtendimax, one of three dicamba products, the other two being Tavium from Syngenta and Ingenia from BASF. So they're pleased to see EPA making significant progress and opened a public comment period for low-volatility dicamba herbicides to be used over the top of dicamba-tolerant cotton and soybeans. So, yeah, we'll see where this lands. But, there's hope there, I guess, after what's it been, 2 years?
It's been a while. Two and a half?
It's two and a half. Well, and, like, remember, too, the timing of it, because it was 2 years ago in June, and it was just right at a time when we were going to use it. You know, it was just a very...
Yep, and then there was the whole, like, well, can I use it or not?
Right.
Supply and, where, you know, people had it in hand, and yeah.
And that was a time, too, where you had a lot of that genetics, you had it already planted, so it was just an interesting timing, yes.
Yeah. All right, so we'll wait to see where that ends up. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So we're going to talk a little bit about the history of crop protection, since we were talking about products like fungicide, insecticide, herbicide. So the first recorded use of an insecticide, it was about 4,500 years ago by Sumerians who used sulfur compounds to control insects and mites attacking their food sources. Then, 1st century BC, Romans used a few techniques, compound made from crushed olives, burnt sulfur, and salt, to control ants and weeds. 800 AD, the Chinese used arsenic to mix with water to control insects in their field crops and citrus orchards. Other pesticides derived from natural sources, such as pyrethrum from dried chrysanthemum flowers and nicotine extract from tobacco plants, evolved over time. From 1750 to about 1880, farmers began using crop protection products more widely, and international trade promoted the use of plant and metal-based insecticides. Till the early 1900s, Europe and the U.S. used compounds made from sulfur, iron, copper, arsenic, and sodium to control weeds in cereal crops and fungus in grapes. In the 1930s and 40s, effective and widely used fungicides were developed along with the first synthetic insecticides. By the 60s and 70s, farmers began to utilize integrated pest management to control pests. In the 1990s, crop protection product development concentrated on finding active ingredients that better targeted pests. Through biotechnology, plant scientists also improved the IPM concept, using naturally occurring materials such as insect hormone or venom, microbes, or plant material extracts like Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT, to more accurately and selectively target pests. Finally, weed treatments such as neonicotinoids were developed during this time to protect emerging seedlings from pests while not impacting beneficial species like pollinators. And that would be a little bit of a debate in the current climate. But yeah, so it's been a concept that's been around for a very long time. Can you imagine 4,500 years ago? Like,
I didn't even
figuring that out.
I wouldn't have even guessed it would have been like over 1,000 years, you know, like, yeah. That's unbelievable that they could figure out, especially the first ones where they're using sulfur to do that, and then the copper compounds in the 1800s, like, I mean, that's still...
Bugs are so annoying, we have to find something.
Yeah, what's going to stop them? Just think if they had that during the plagues, do you think they would have been able to stop the locust plagues or the...
Yeah, I don't know, maybe. Depends on if the locusts hated the same things other insects hated.
I'd like to see how they use, like, even the Greeks and the Romans that used oil and ash. Like, what? I mean, we're getting ash all the time now.
Today's a bad day again.
Yeah, we're getting all kinds of Canadian ash down here.
Yeah.
So you wonder if that's and in general, I'd say insects are low. So maybe that's what's going on out there.
Remind me to tell you how to catch a polar bear later.
All right.
It involves an ash hole.
Moving on.
All right. Thank you, Matt. And I want to thank all our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. Heck, tell a farmer enemy if you want to. Tell somebody,
you've never said that.
Yeah, tell somebody.
Farmer nemesis.
Tell somebody you don't like, because I think that, yeah, you're like, tell them about us. So it's really easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio in Apple Podcasts, or on your Android phone, you're going to need to download an app like Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcast. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into our Cool Beans That's Corny with some current events. So Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week. And it's near and dear to Bill and I's hearts. There's a study looking at cover crop nitrogen credits.
Ooh.
That he and I are helping with. So research is underway to find out how much nitrogen credit can be gained from using cover crops. Chris Bandura with the University of Wisconsin Extension told Brownfield Ag News the research is being done on 10 farms to learn what nitrogen credit, farmers can expect from different cover crop species as part of Wisconsin's nitrogen optimization pilot program. So using a similar protocol where we're planting a cover crop mixer that is comprised of at least 80% legume, and then whatever else the farmer wants to mix in terms of grasses, brassicas, if they want. Cover crops are being seeded after wheat, so we're getting close to wheat harvest here. And Bandura said the corn will be planted next spring and nitrogen will be applied from 0 to about 300 pounds per acre, so we can look at the corn yield response to the nitrogen and ultimately determine, is there a difference in where the economic optimum nitrogen rate occurs in corn when we follow a legume cover crop? So this will be a two-year project covering corn in 2026 and 2027. And yeah, Bill and I are working with two of the 10 farms that are part of this project, so we're excited to see the results. All right, that's corny this week. Maybe you've seen it. Maybe you have only read about it, but tight tassel wrap is showing up in the Corn Belt. So as the U.S. corn crop progresses through some of its most critical stages of development, something unusual is unfolding, or not unfolding, beneath the surface of, or rather beneath the leaves. Nation's corn crop is in great shape for the most part. USDA rated 74% of it good to excellent for the third straight week. Yet a phenomenon called tight tassel wrap has been reported in several top corn-growing states and can potentially impact overall yield. So what is it? Well, a tight tassel wrap occurs when the topmost leaf of the corn plant fails to unfurl, trapping the tassel and preventing it from properly shedding pollen. Kansas State University agronomist Craig Roosboom, Tina Sullivan, and Logan Simon noted that unpollinated silks may continue to grow, even reaching several inches in length, and can block access to later emerging silks. And when temperature rises into the upper 90s, these silks may lose receptivity to pollen altogether. So why is it happening? Well, it's probably been 10 or 15 since we've seen this severe of a issue, but tassels releasing pollen while still wrapped is fairly uncommon, but can happen. And we believe it's a form of rapid growth syndrome occurring at the end of the vegetative stages, likely triggered by a combination of high temperatures, ample moisture, and non-limiting nutrient availability. So
it's growing too fast.
It's growing too fast, yeah. Which we see that other times in throughout the season.
Well, right, when you apply a growth regulator at certain times, and then it kind of, I've heard that buggy whip and, you know, tight wrap. I think this is such a, this tight tassel wrap is the lamest name I've ever heard.
TTW.
Like, we need to come up with a new name. Like, just tight tassels, I wouldn't expect that to be like, it can't get any pollen out or like we need to, tassel strangulation or we need some sort of name that implies that literally that top leaf is just cutting off your whole, your whole tassel's, not existing up there.
Unfortunately, because it would be very fitting in honor of Ozzy this week, Crazy Top is taken.
Yes.
So that's a whole nother different thing that happens in corn. So we can't call it Crazy Top. But we could call it something like, I think your strangulation's maybe a little extreme.
A little too much.
Yeah.
In a world where corn is being strangulated.
So we need to get the police involved on that. Corns are self-strangulation. But, yeah. So hopefully you're not seeing that. But if you are, I don't know that there's really much you can do about it. It's unfortunately one of those things where you got to hope that other plants around it are able to release pollen and help pollinate that plant, even though it's not releasing as well. So, all right, we'll wrap things up then with our Field Good Friday. And as a heartfelt tribute to dedicated farmers helping to feed the nation, Culver's has announced its 2025 To Farmers With Love contest, an annual nationwide initiative running now through August 1st. Restaurant chain is inviting guests to nominate a farmer making, a meaningful impact in their community for a chance to win a trip to attend a Tim McGraw concert at the Field of Dreams movie site August 30th, 2025, or the Velocity Music Festival on August 31st, both held in Dyersville, Iowa. To nominate a farmer, guests can visit the contest page and respond to one of the following prompts with a photo, video, or written story. How has this farmer changed your life or the lives of those in your community? How has this farmer gone above and beyond to make a positive impact on the future of agriculture? Or how has a farming helped shape who they are on and off the farm? So Culver's is a sponsor of the McGraw concert at the Field of Dreams site, and it will bring its signature hospitality to life at the concert through its Blue Room experience, complete with vanilla fresh frozen custard samples, lawn games, photo ops, and more. So if you know someone you'd like to nominate or would like to even nominate yourself, you can go to the Culver's contest page, which is culvers.com/twofarmerswithlovecontest, and nominate someone today. You've got a little over a week, about exactly a week, actually, to nominate someone yet as of the time we're recording this podcast. So, well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So today we talked about fungicide and some things to consider when looking at making fungicide applications, whether it's corn, beans, or another crop. In our spotlight, we talked about EPA proposing re-registering dicamba. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of crop protection. Cool Beans this week was some nitrogen optimization plots looking at cover crop legume credits. That's Corny, is tight tassel wrap affecting pollination. And our Field Good Friday was the 2025 Two Farmers with Love contest ending August 1st. Nominate a farmer today. Thanks for listening. And as always, happy farming.